Hello, everyone. This is Cassie Burns, co-founder of All Your Data. I'm an attorney who's been using AI and machine learning for 10 years. I love data and love talking to people about data, and that's what this podcast is about. Each episode of Cassie and will feature a new guest. Each guest comes from a different background with a different approach and attitude towards technology. We'll talk about their experiences and hopefully we'll learn a thing or two. Thanks for joining. Let's get started with Cassie and Rebecca Fisher. Rebecca, thank you so much for joining me here today. Rebecca. Now, audience, one thing I want you to know about Rebecca Fisher, she is the cyber auntie. She is a cybersecurity professional and a self-appointed cyber auntie to her community. And she's someone that I had the fortune of meeting through us both being members of Women in Cybersecurity, WESIS. And we really just hit it off and maintained contacts. And I couldn't think of a better guest to have on this podcast. So, Rebecca, please tell the audience a little bit about yourself and also tell us about what it's like being a cyber auntie and what that even is.
Well, I want to say thank you for having me. And I am nervous. This is like my first like legit podcast. So, you know, I am Little Traverse Bay Bands of Odawa Indians citizen. I live on our reservation in Harbor Springs, Michigan. I worked for my tribal government for a number of years. And I went to a tribal college, the Institute of American Indian Arts. I was a museum studies major. My background is really in preservation, collection, which then includes historical documentation. And that's really why I got into cybersecurity, was data sovereignty, gathering data, collecting data, making sure that the data is controlled and protected by the tribe, right? So when we think about data, how it's can be community led and not led by, you know, someone else, that it's really driven from our own tribal communities, and making sure that we have the shareholder agreement with the tribal government and them developing their processes and their technology projects. So I got into cybersecurity. I work as an account executive now, and I've been in cyber for four or five years, really into it. And I joined a program at the University of Michigan, finished that program, and then started my career on auditing. So,
I mean, auditing data, museums, how could we not be really good friends, Rebecca? I feel like I do want to ask, how did you make that leap from interest in museum preservation, you know, provenance in essence, right, to cybersecurity? Was data that underlying like thread?
I think it was really, I worked in the chairman's office for about 16 years. And, you know, I was a museum studies major, so I always felt like I was curating collections. I worked at the Smithsonian when we first opened the National Museum of the American Indian on the mall. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Ugh.
And so I worked for the deputy director, and I was doing all these crazy technology things then, right? Like, that was at the time where you had the big saucer phones and you were like trying to troubleshoot meetings that were, you know, in some remote area on a saucer phone and a big giant TV and making sure everybody could be seen. And then I went and started working for my own tribe in the chairman's office. And you realize that everyday documents are, they have historical, that's the historical record of the tribe, right? When you start looking at water accords and your fishing and treaty rights and the projects that you're working on, that's, that data all belongs to the tribe. Those documents belong to the tribe. And so, you know, making sure that respecting the tribal data sovereignty and ensuring that tribes maintain control over their data, including how it's stored, how it's used, and how it's shared, right? So you have, you know, your GIS department is working on some cool projects. Maybe you need to develop those MOUs and MOAs and data sharing agreements with other municipalities, and realizing that those are important. Those are important documents. And so, you know, they're going to come up later that, yeah, we did have this data sharing agreement, or yes, we did sign on to this accord, or we did sign on to this treaty. Those are all important documents. I worked on a couple projects with veterans and finding old veteran photos, and those records were important, and they're important to those families, and it's up to that family to share that information. But how, when that family gives it to the tribe or helps on Veterans Day with a tribal event, like, you know, making sure that it's okay for us to share that information.
Yeah, I think that you're absolutely right. I mean, documents are history. I think in particular for many of the historical challenges that the Native tribes have experienced, and really making sure there's an advocate, and having a member of the tribe being the advocate is even better, right? You don't want some external person going in there. The fact that you're doing it within, I think, is incredibly powerful, which leads me to cyber aunties. Rebecca, what is cyber aunties all
about? The love of my life. So I have a friend that's a really good friend that I grew up with, and she is a graphic designer. I had another lady that was working in databases, and we were just sitting around, you know, our kids were running around crazy one night, and I was like, we should just start the cyber aunties, where, you know, we help other women get into cyber. Cause I think a lot of times you're so wrapped up in life that you don't realize, like, whether you're an admin at a government center, whether you're doing water quality for your tribal government, wherever you're working, cybersecurity affects your whole life. I mean, everyone is working in cybersecurity. And so I think it was important to have more representation, A, women, and then Native women in cybersecurity and technology. So we just got involved, and it's, you know, sometimes you just need, your mentee just needs a pep talk, like, you can do this, or they need a Venmo of $50 to go get a manicure or go out to dinner so that they realize they're not going crazy when they're trying to sit for their Security Plus or their SIS or, you know, their ISC. Or I think there was a big avenue of where we can support, and maybe not bring, I mean, we might bring into some programming. We've talked about that a little bit more, but it's really been a grassroots effort, setting it up and connecting people with mentorship, right? And good mentors that, you know, that sometimes they need a hug, sometimes they need a meal cooked, and realizing that it's a community effort and not just always like, you're going to be on here doing work, and, oh, you don't know how to set up your home lab. Like, okay, well, I'm going to come over tonight with a pizza, and the kids are going to run around, and we're going to set your home lab up. And that's okay, so that you can figure it out. Like, those are important things. And I think that is sometimes what's missing, right? Is just that level of support. And so I just wanted to support in that way. One of the ladies I've worked with, she got a job. Like, it was like her first IT job. And I was like, well, let's get you clothes to wear, right? So, and get you professional clothes. So things like that. And really just using resources. We haven't done a lot of like traditional programming, right? Like, where we're going to get you this IT certificate or something like that. But we have helped them look at there's so many other programs offering free or low cost. And if they can't afford it, we'll pay for it, right? If they can't afford their cert to sit for their cert, like, we'll figure out a way to pay for it, whether it's utilizing other funds or utilizing our funds. So, I mean, that's really how it started.
So it sounds like some of it is emotional, like pep talk, being a hype man, right? Cheerleader, and being that maybe fairy godmother, like saying, hey, go get that manicure on your Friday night. Are you finding that it's even just letting members of your community know that this is a career path that you might want to consider? Is it even just creating awareness of these career paths? Are people already searching you out, Rebecca, because they know of you as the cyber auntie?
I mean, I don't know that people are searching me out, right? And I have a good group. I have a lot of Native women that I will reach out to as mentors or bounce ideas off of. And so it's a collective group, I would say. And they all have great ideas, right? I mean, sometimes you just need a hug from Aunt Bev, you know, mm-hmm. and it happens, right?
I need a hug from Aunt Bev right now. So yeah. Aunt Bev, wherever you are, please find me.
Yes, she is a gem. And I think it is bringing awareness, right? Getting our kids involved in robotics, getting them to these camps, right? There's cybersecurity camps in the summer. There's different programming for Native students throughout colleges, throughout DC. And like, how can we help get the word out about them? And maybe their parents can't drive them there. Or maybe we drive with the parent up there to drop their kid off to that college campus and let them experience that. I think those are important things that sometimes are a necessity in the community.
Absolutely. I love that you're doing it. Anything I can do to support it, Rebecca, you know, just let me know. But it sounds like the group is in good hands with you, the Rebeccas and Bevs of the community. So we've talked a little bit about what you're doing in your own community. And I know in our just chatter back and forth in our communications, we'll talk about AI things and usually in the context of cybersecurity. And I think that there's a lot of focus on the arms race of AI and how AI is getting more and more powerful and all of these emerging trends, but it still often ignores the fact that there is a tech gap in the world, a technology gap, that it assumes that everyone has easy access to these technologies that are going to change the world. But you firsthand have experienced that technology gap, haven't you?
Yeah. So when COVID hit, where we lived, we didn't have internet, right? I mean, my kids grew up watching like VHS tapes and DVDs of like the Golden Girls, you know? I mean, I have two boys and they can, you know, quote Sophia Petrillo because that was what we had to watch. And right. So I know when we finally got internet where I live, it was huge, right? Like it opened up our whole world. And, you know, it's cool to see our neighborhood. I mean, I know that just in my neighborhood, like when markets come up or round dances or the powwow trail in the summer, helping people just get their phone set up so that they can take payments, right? Like teaching them how to use the technology to be able to take payments and making sure they get it set up and making sure that their privacy connections are correct. You know, I know Venmo, like if you don't have it set correct, everyone can see what you pay, yes. what you paid out. And so I tell them, I'm like, hey, you know, you might want to set this. Like, I don't know who's on your friend list. So, and I don't know who's on your list. So like, those are things to think about, right? As a Native entrepreneur. And so just having those conversations, getting their phones to work, we handed out iPads and that the idea was that people would be able to, you know, reach out to their loved ones. Well, that's great that you give someone an iPad, but you got to teach them how to use it mm-hmm. and set it up. And, you know, and so like those little things matter. So that's what I tell some of the women that I work with. I'm like, you're already doing this. You're already doing some sort of, you're already in tech, right? Mm-hmm. You helped set up that whole commission. Like, good job. You know, you set up a whole database on water quality control. Awesome. Like, right. How are you protecting it? Let's talk about that. Let's think about that.
And I find that so much of working in tech, I work on the legal tech side. Really, I think what makes you incredibly powerful in your job, really effective, is that project management and attention to detail and being well organized. And so many women, like, we know how to get organized. We know how to get things together. And like, it's valuing those skills, I think, would help people realize, I may not know as much as the true tech stuff right now, but I'm really good at keeping things on track. I'm really good at pushing things forward. I'm really good at messaging. And those are skills that are really hard to teach. Like, I can teach you how to run a DT search. It's this stuff that's hard. And I think really highlighting that power that I think women often like really excel at, I think is another great thing to highlight. So,
and they know what they have, right? You can bring in IT people, you can bring in third party assessors, but when you're working with someone that's running a program that knows what's in that program, they know best, right? Mm-hmm. They know what they're collecting on the daily. They know what the important reports are. They know how their funding works. You need all of those people. I mean, I talk a lot about tribes, you know, with preservation of language and AI and all of this out there, and like what's being put into the AI and how are they controlling that, right? Because it really should be like a group effort and a community effort. Like, I think all tribal communities should have a commission that maybe is a technology commission or a AI commission or an infrastructure commission, and that they get, that they ensure that they get buy-in from elders and the community members and the people doing the work, because they all often bring a different point of view and they know what they are working on. Mm-hmm. They're the specialist, right? And so, and really with tech, you want the specialist. You want to know what's important, right? That's what is great about, one thing I will say about AI is, right, you have all this data. You have this whole collection of data, and it's an easy way to tag it, right? It's an easy way to say, this is duplicates, like that kind of thing. So if you're getting your files set up, if you're working on that, but having a consortium of people from your tribal community to set that up, I think is important. And I think it's important that leadership is involved and listens to the community.
Well, and that brings us to the other topic I wanted to talk to. And this really kind of goes in some ways back to what we talked about at the very beginning of our conversation, data and data ownership and data sovereignty. Those are all important things, but I think the focus on AI and seeing the importance of data in that context, I imagine, really from your perspective, really highlights how important data sovereignty is, or maybe it puts it highlights it even more. Like, I don't need to tell you that it's important. You obviously know that for your tribe and your community. But, you know, as these foundational models come into play, you know, I remember reading an article that many of these foundational models, they think in English because the majority of the data that they've been trained on is English language documents. And they're probably going to follow, you know, norms of the primary region that it's trained on. So,
you know, the
bias. And so there are like layers of data sovereignty issues, I would imagine, in the context of smaller communities with very rich cultures, right? From the focus of what you want done with your data in the context of training these models, how an AI tool can be used to maybe help preserve a language on the flip side. And then even you and I had read an article about data sovereignty from someone, I think a professor in Australia or New Zealand, and just even the concept of categorizing data for different tribes in and of itself is biased, like what's collected and how it's categorized. You're not talking to that community. And so there's inherent biases in what data they're even focused on. So I found all of that incredibly compelling and important. And, you know, are those conversations that you're having with leaders in your communities?
Well, I think it comes up. I mean, I feel like it's in every conversation, it's the big, like the risk, right? And AI is coming, and I guarantee you staff is already using it, right? So you need to be having those conversations, and leadership has to have buy-in. And sometimes leadership even needs to be trained on what's going on. And there is different, if people go to different conferences, there are whole tracks on this type of stuff. And I think it's, you really need the stakeholder alignment, right? You want to facilitate better communication among your departments, ensure your alignment on governance strategies. And that right there should come from leadership.
Right. Has the concept of like deepfake and fraud come up too much as well? You know, that's a topic that I find fascinating, something that like Jerry Bowie and I have collaborated on before. So was wondering if that's kind of like on the radar of leadership as far as potential cybersecurity risks.
Well, I think definitely, you know, when you hear about business email compromise, right? I mean, they're so good now, right? They can be in your system and look like you know, look like something that you pay every month. So really training your staff, working with leadership. I mean, and training people, right? I mean, there's all these things now going out that they're targeting elders. And mm-hmm. so with phone calls. And so even having those conversations at your elders lunch about what they need to look at and really realizing that, you know, not every phone call might be correct. The IRS isn't going to call you and tell you to make your payment over the phone. No. your snowplow guy isn't calling you to say, hey, you haven't paid this bill. I need you to pay me right now on this app. I'm going to send you a link, right? Those are real things and those are real conversations. And I know I can't speak for every community, but I know that those conversations, I do see different things in newsletters. And if you're out on Facebook, my kids tell me Facebook's for old people. you know, there's things about that going out. And I think those are important. I mean, it's everybody. You're training everybody.
Yeah. Yeah. So my parents live with my husband and I, and I definitely try to tell my dad, just don't answer the calls. Don't answer them, Dad. He's retired. He's bored. Don't do it. And I've done some of the mock-ups of my own approved AI voice clone that I kicked off, and they were just like, wow, that's impressive. So yeah. And to your point, you know, earlier, you're really starting to narrow that tech gap. More people are getting things like iPads and maybe cell phones. And part of that comes responsibility in training, creating awareness of the risk that comes with that.
Well, and I live in an area where, I mean, it's snowy and sometimes elders don't want to drive over to the clinic, right? And if they have internet, there's a push to kind of do some healthcare over the internet, right? And I think those are great things. But making sure that the staff person that's doing that and the client understand how it works and what it's going to be used for and what to look for, I guess, so that they're not getting scammed. I mean, I started a safe word with my parents because I was like, hey, if any of us kids call, like, you should have a word that it's not us calling from wherever and I'm in trouble. And
right. I think my family knows if I call them, it's probably not me because I have a hard time just even responding to their text messages.
Cass is like, no. Call Jerry.
Yeah, call Jerry. Well, what do you, you know, you're a cybersecurity account executive. How are you starting to see the cybersecurity landscape change with AI and generative AI?
I definitely think that there's a more of a focus on our, you know, like clearly articulating a data that's collected on tribal lands, right? Definitely in my career, I've seen that start to change, right? And more MOUs and more data sharing agreements. And that's a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's good to see. Not that, oh, well, we got it and it's, you know, you gave it to us. So now it's our data. Looking at principles, I think one of the principles is like the CARE principles, right? Collective benefit, authority, and then control, responsibility, and ethics, right? And then how do you implement those into your tribal values? Like we might look at the 7 grandfather teachings to implement how we care for data. And then really having strong laws, right? Working with your council to enact laws and policies governing, you know, storage, sharing, data use, those kinds of things. I think we're definitely seeing, I definitely am seeing those come out. I'm seeing people form committees and those are all great things.
Well, so it sounds like overall there is an awareness and an awareness of the importance of data and the use and how that data is being used then, right?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know that I can't speak for all the communities, right? But I definitely think that when you see different things come out now, people are becoming more aware of it and the importance of data. And I think that's where AI can be great too, right? I know like a lot of people are adverse to using it, but I also think that leadership can make great decisions based on real data.
Yeah.
You know, and in real reporting. And they say, oh, this is a problem. Like we need to fix this, whether it's through legislation, through policy, through projects, like those are, you know, community collaborative partnerships, that kind of stuff. I think, you know, engaging your community members to understand the priorities and ensure frameworks and stuff like that align with our values.
Mm-hmm. How do you see, or what do you see as what, from your own personal perspective, to your point, you're not like the spokesperson of everyone, but as a cybersecurity ante, how do you see emerging tech, or what would you like to see from emerging tech do to be more inclusive of underrepresented groups?
Oh my gosh, like the list could go on and on. I mean, I think focusing on capacity building, right? And working with the tribes before you are the spokesperson for them, making sure that you know that community, right? And tribes working together, like looking at lessons learned from, you know, what's taken. I think there's definitely like the AI for data governance, you know, utilizing it again for classification, quality checks, policy enforcement, those are good things, right?
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
utilizing it to use it against us because it's biased, that's a bad thing.
Right, right.
So, I mean, really working with those communities, getting more younger people involved, right? I think about like GIS and IoT, right? Like using those devices to gather, to govern like environmental and land and resource data, right? That's really important for our hunting and fishing and treaty rights, mm-hmm. right? And how I think that that can be used in a good way.
Right. Or even, you know, the issue of missing and murdered Indigenous, you know, women, how can IoT data help solve some of those crimes? Because it's increasingly becoming difficult to commit a crime and get away with it because we leave so many digital traces. So, you know, what could be done from that perspective as well?
Yeah. And I think there's a lot, there is some going on in that space. I mean, I would have to like send you links or whatever, but I know that there is quite a few people working on different projects in that space. And I think some of it is, that's another way that AI could help is if it's an old case, like, or a cold case, maybe those files haven't been digitized, right? And
right.
that's a way to digitize it to be able to look at the files and send them to new, fresh set eyes and those kinds of things. And I think that is important work. And that is one way that AI could be utilized. I just think we talk about AI and it's just such a big vastness, right? And everyone's mm-hmm. got a different view of what it is. And I know we've had conversations about e-discovery and it can be overwhelming,
mm-hmm.
but I always remind people in the like, if you looked at what you're doing in your regular life, you're probably already using it and you don't even
right.
realize it.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. So let's kind of, you know, one last thing I want to ask you about, you talk about getting more engagement from younger members of your community. What advice would you give to a young member in your community who might have a vague interest in cybersecurity? What would you tell them to get started, how to get started beyond staying in touch with the cyber antis?
I think just getting involved, right? If you're working at a place, think about the systems that you're using, right? If your summer job is working at a grocery store, think about how that point of sale is working, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of times where you might be working with older people and the younger person has the advantage because they know how this stuff works because they've had it in their hands their entire life.
Right.
Right. I mean, I think I was like in my 20s before I got a cell phone. So, you know, they've had
too.
It. Yeah. So
I'm old though. So that was kind of.
But I think that there's lots of opportunity, right? Where, like, think about where you are and just have a genuine interest and seek those interests out and find a good mentor or a community member and just start having those conversations.
Yeah.
You know?
I love it. And don't cut yourself short. Like to me, not, I mean, this is your advice, but I would also say like, we are often our worst enemies and we think of every reason why we shouldn't do something. And sometimes just the process of doing it is really all you need. You will find your way along the road.
You're absolutely you need to push, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so you start doing and you're like, oh man, am I in the right spot or am I not in the right spot? I'm happy to have that conversation and always tell you you're probably in the right spot, or maybe we need to chase the navigation a little bit.
Well, I love all that advice, Rebecca. Here at the end, do you have any closing thoughts, you know, you'd like to share with the audience?
Not really. I think that, you know, being in cyber and seeing kind of what you see in cyber, it can be like overwhelming, but just stay your course, get involved, find good mentors, find good people to bounce ideas off, and, you know, just keep moving. I think I talked to somebody about today about operation collaboration. And I think that, you know, anything in cyber that's what your whole life is going to be, operation collaboration, because you are going to have to collaborate with everyone and you really need to, that's going to be your focus.
Mm-hmm. I love that, operation collaboration. So I think that's a great theme for 2025 and onward. So, well, Rebecca, thank you so much for joining me on this episode. I know I've learned a lot from you and know my audience has as well. And to my audience, thank you so much for joining. And we look forward to you joining the next episode of Cassie. And